Anderson heaving one down the sideline, and he's got Cass Allen.
Listening to the Bruin Bible. This is your host, Will Decker, bringing you UCLA football content all throughout the year for LA Football Network.
Up, LAFB fans, you are listening to the Bruin Bible right now, but we want to bring to you our sponsor for the show. It's Bet Online. Our partners at Bet Online continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all of the latest odds, news, and sports developments, including this year's Wimbledon finals. I know our guy Madman will be all over that. The big tennis fan of the bunch. Major League Baseball, Dodgers in the midst of a big-time season, highest payroll in the league, three MVPs in the lineup. Can they figure it out? The latest fighting news, a huge MMA fight coming up this weekend for the UFC, and even next season's early NFL futures. I know you guys will be hammering the Rams and Chargers overs on the futures for next season. Head to our website to use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LAFB to get the bonus and get into the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. What is up and welcome to a new edition of the Bruin Bible. Your host, Will Decker, here for LA Football Network. We are so excited as football season is 6 weeks away, roughly, from today, middle of July. Things are a little slow, but they're about to heat up exponentially within the Bruin Bible field. And we're going to try to do something very new here. We are going to start ranking the position groups, on offense and defense, and see where UCLA stacks up among these teams. And I think UCLA has a very, very good quarterback at the helm in Dorian Thompson-Robinson. But we want to talk about the depth. What's behind him? What could potentially happen if we mix up the quarterback room? God forbid someone gets injured. Who's going to have to step up for some of these guys? And I think that's where this is going to be a little different than some of the other rankings, because you may see, you know, a guy like Caleb Williams, who will likely, if he continues this trajectory, be the number one pick in the 2023 NFL draft. However, what's behind him matters. And spoiler, USC is not the number one team on this list because of what goes on behind a guy like Caleb Williams and the depth behind him. So very fun list to make. We got our top five quarterback depth rankings coming to you from the Pac-12 with some honorable mentions in here as well. And we're going to start with the honorable mentions. Three teams were kind of in that running for that fifth spot. Unfortunately, we're kind of left off the table. And we start with Washington. Washington, they got a transfer quarterback in Michael Penix Jr., formerly of Indiana, played some Big Ten football, played in some big games. A guy that, you know, was solid enough to make Indiana a team that went to the Outback Bowl in 2020, got into a 6-2 record. You know, he's going to be competing with the likes of Dylan Morris and Sam Heward for the starting quarterback spot. But what I'm not crazy about with Penix Jr., 29 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. This was a guy that was a game manager at best at Indiana. And I say this because they had very strong running games behind him. When you look at accuracy and how he was downfield, intermediate throws, different, you know, accuracy grades, he graded among the worst of the starting of the Power Five schools. And the last 2 years, I mean, he was not great when it came to the accuracy department. 60% is kind of like the minimum threshold. You know, that's like a hitter batting like, you know, 250. It's not great, but like that's the standard it needs to be, 60% and up. Last year, he threw for 53.7%. Not ideal. And I know it was limited time. He played 4 or 5 games. He got injured. He eventually opted to transfer from Indiana, but 53% is miserable. And this is over a 5-game sample size. And then even the year before, 2020, I think that was kind of his coming out party in college football as being a name that you somewhat know about. He completed only 56% of his passes. So still well below that 60% threshold. You look at a guy like Dylan Morris, the guy who's also competing with him, relatively inconsistent as a starter. You know, 14 touchdowns, 12 interceptions last year. But Washington fans, you know this. The game that I continually go back to was the tone setter of the season. I think Washington really had a chance to be a competitive team within the Pac-12 had Morris's play been a little bit more stable. Opening week, they're playing Montana at home. Zero touchdowns, three interceptions cost them the game. And, you know, I just think the lack of playmaking ability that Morris possessed, you know, made Washington, which was a team that, you know, week two, the hyped matchup was Washington against Michigan. Washington, Pac-12 team, maybe one of the top three, four teams in the conference, was going to be traveling to Michigan to play in the Big House, and which was the primetime game that week. And Dylan Morris could not live up to that hype. Sam Huard. This is the guy that I may have the most confidence in delivering. Comes from an NFL lineage. Brock Huard, I believe, is his uncle or his dad. Damon Huard, both of them, you know, family members. Both of them made the NFL. Both of them are very talented quarterbacks. Sam is a big lefty quarterback, former five-star recruit. He got a little bit of sample size. He went right into kind of the fire when his first start was against Washington State last year. In the Apple Cup, threw four interceptions, was not beautiful, but you're banking on what this kid can potentially become. And Sam Huard, five-star recruit, big lefty, you know, maybe there's something to work with there. And it's a caveat. They do have a lot of starter experience there. I think that's why they were even a fringe contender. But if Huard can come out there, win the job, and, you know, deliver on some of that five-star promise, maybe there is an avenue where this team could move up because they do have players that have starting experience as their backups and, you know, Dylan Morris and Penix Jr. if Huard were to take that spot. So Washington was an honorable mention for us to start this up. Second team I got for you, Arizona. And Arizona, a team that has, you know, really, really struggled in past years, but they get a big transfer from Washington State, Mr. Jaden Delora. Jaden Delora can really spin the football out there. Wazoo quarterback, came in as a true sophomore, and you just kind of felt that he was the alpha in the room when he was playing there. 23 touchdowns, 9 interceptions for Washington State, made some big-time plays for the Cougars. And this is a guy that was very coveted on the transfer market when it came to the quarterback room because they saw what he could do. This guy came in there and really ignited the fire for Washington State. Jed Fish gets him down in Arizona. I think that's a very solid quarterback. I think there's a scenario where you think of the top 3 to 4 returning quarterbacks, where if one of those guys went down, got injured, Jaden Delora can easily make a Pac-12 third team if you were able to put up the numbers he did last year in a new system, maybe elevate that a little bit more as he's now an upperclassman on campus. Their backup quarterback is, you know, Jordan McLeod. Jordan McLeod is a transfer from South Florida, has 23 games of total starting experience, which is valuable. You want to throw out a quarterback that has been in the fire, has been in these game-like situations, because it's like riding a bike. You can tell everyone how to do it, but until you're in the fire in these games where it's third down and long, you have your opposing fans, 60,000-plus cheering in your face, sometimes even more than that. You want to have a guy that's been there and has done that. And McLeod, regardless of how it went for the first 3 games of last year, 2 touchdowns, 5 interceptions in a 3-game sample size, you know, you want a guy that's been in those experiences, and he clearly has. He got injured with some serious leg injuries last year, only allowing him to play 3 games. But what I would come back for McLeod is you got to evaluate the talent that was surrounding him. That Arizona team last year, the Wildcats, you know, and Jed Fish is our guy. We're the Bruin Bible. This guy was our OC for a couple of years. We like Jed Fish. He's a great, solid dude. That team was referred to as one of the worst teams, not only in the last decade of the Pac-12, but maybe ever. I mean, the running joke was Arizona Community College. This is what this team was on paper last year. They were getting blown out, you know, one win all year. It just was not a team that really put any type of fear into any opponent. So, 2 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, yeah, but are we accounting for what the offensive line was for Jordan McLeod? Are we, you know, are we accounting for what the receiver room was like for Jordan McLeod? So I think on that standpoint, they're a little bit underrated coming in. Do they crack the top five? No, but having two guys with, you know, close to 20 games of total starting experience between the both of them, that's very, very valuable. And I think they at least deserve an honorable mention spot, especially with Delora coming through, a guy that, you know, could be lighting up the Pac-12 for the next few years. Third honorable mention on this list, and that is Oregon State. And Delora is very good, as well as the next quarterback I'm going to get to as the top five quarterbacks or quarterback rooms within the conference. We're going to start with that team who I feel like is a very underrated quarterback. But Chance Nolan always struck me last year as somebody that was just really underrated. 19 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, and completed 64% of his passes on 318 completions. Underrated runner, too, ran for close to 300 yards, got Oregon State back into bowl game picture. And by the way, he's returning a lot of talent in the receiving room, such as Treshawn Harris, Tyjon Lindsey, veteran players that have established themselves for Oregon State. So there's a case where Chance Nolan, 19 touchdowns, 10 picks last year, he can get to the, you know, mid to high 20s in the touchdown room through the air next year. I really believe in Chance Nolan. I think he's a very solid quarterback. He's not a star, but he's a guy that if you're rolling him out there, you feel comfortable with him under center. And I think Chance Nolan is a guy that is going to take a lot of people by surprise in the Pac-12, and he could potentially guide them back to a 7-8-9 win campaign if everything goes right, because he took them to that bowl game last year. The Pac-12 North, very weak this year. You know, Cal is not great. Washington's rebuilding. Washington State is a far cry from what they were under Mike Leach. You know, Oregon, even Oregon, I mean, they've got a new coach coming in Dan Lanning. We don't know how that's going to pan out. So I think Chance Nolan, Oregon State might be the most powerful offense in the Pac-12 North, and I got to put Chance Nolan as a credit to that. Now, behind Nolan, they've got Tristan Gebbia, who started a few games at Nebraska, eventually transferred to Oregon State. Gebbia hasn't played in the last 21 months due to serious injuries for him. So he's still of a lot of a wild card. Ben Golberson, the, you know, backup last year, you know, only took 9 pass attempts. He was 6 of 9 through the air for a TD. But knowing that Gebbia still has some starting experience behind a guy like Chance Nolan, I'm going to put them as the 6th best team and the closest team I was to putting a quarterback room, as well as Arizona, in that top 5. So those are the honorable mentions. Washington, Arizona, Oregon State were teams that just missed the cut in terms of quarterback depth and quarterback room. Now I start you off at number 5. And this could surprise some people. I think the first 2 names on this list will surprise some people. We'll see how the rest of this list does transpire. But number 5 is Stanford. And it all comes down to a guy named Tanner McKee. And Tanner McKee, some people are very, very high on this guy. And I bring some PFF stats to the table to prove how valuable he was for Stanford last year, a team that went 3-9. First off, the first PFF stat I've got for Tanner McKee. He led all Pac-12 QBs in QBR last year on intermediate throws. Those, you know, 5 to 10 yard completion range, he was very good on that. And you look at the tape, and Tanner McKee, there's some NFL quality throws there. I go back to the USC game in the end zone last year. I think it was the 2nd quarter. Fires an absolute dart to the end zone where maybe 2 or 3 guys in this conference could make that throw. Tanner McKee makes that. Big physical quarterback, 6'6", you know, 15 touchdowns, 7 interceptions last year for a relatively bad Stanford team under David Shaw. I'm banking on him to be good because of that first PFF stat I shared. And then the second PFF stat I've got for you is he threw an accurate pass. This is a stat that PFF made up, but they do their research for the most part. It's not the Bible or anything like that. You don't have to follow it, you know, 100% to a T, but they relatively know what they're talking about. He, according to PFF, threw an accurate pass on 61.5% of his throws last season, which led the Pac-12 again. So Tanner McKee is accurate. He's big. He can make NFL throws. And a lot of people think he's going to take a leap next year. And going back to PFF, Mike Renner believed this in June of this year. He goes, there's 2 quarterbacks at the top of next year's NFL draft, and that is CJ Stroud and Bryce Young, however you want to match that. They went as far as saying number three is Tanner McKee. Number three quarterback in next year's draft is Tanner McKee. So McKee is a guy that I feel like can elevate Stanford to back to a bowl game if he's as good as advertised for next season. Behind him, not a lot of talent. And, you know, Jack West, a former highly recruited quarterback who left the throes of Alabama, SEC country, to come to Stanford to play quarterback. 86 career attempts, zero touchdowns, three interceptions. Has not been the guy they wanted coming out to the farm for Stanford. And then after him is Ari Patu, you know, 15 career pass attempts. Not ideal. So the backup situation is a little chaotic, to say the least. But this Tanner McKee hype, I couldn't ignore it. I've got to put Stanford at number five on this list. Number four, and this is controversial for a lot of people. This might be my most controversial take on the podcast, but I have Oregon, believe it or not, at number four. And I know people are going to be like, Bo Nix is coming to Oregon. Will, like, this guy was kind of a bum in, you know, at Auburn at the end, didn't really put up a lot of great years. And there's a lot to be said there. You know, he completed over 60% of his passes only 1 year at Auburn as the starting guy. My take on Bo Nix and the quarterback depth for Oregon goes a little like this. Bo Nix has serious starting experience. And unlike Michael Penix, a guy I can compare him to because of the completion percentages, is Bo Nix playing the SEC West. SEC West is the best conference, subset of a conference. You know, eventually we're not going to have conferences, but at currently today, Bo Nix played in the best conference in all of college football, the subset, the SEC West, playing against the likes of Alabama, LSU, Texas A&M. That experience cannot be replicated and with those environments. And he's had some moments. You know, I think for Pac-12 fans, you may remember Bo Nix stringing together a last-second drive against Justin Herbert in Oregon in the opening weekend against or in Dallas. Like, Bo Nix made some plays. This guy, you know, has the ability to be successful. He's a former five-star recruit. But what makes Oregon, to me, the fourth best team quarterback depth-wise in the Pac-12 is the guys that are behind it. Behind Bo Nix, we've got Ty Thompson, who's a former five-star recruit. He threw only 15 attempts last year, but the potential is very high. I know it's a new coaching staff coming in, but Ty Thompson, he looks like a quarterback that can potentially deliver big things for the Ducks. And behind Ty Thompson is Jay Butterfield, a quarterback that was from Brentwood, California, 6'6", big recruit. He was a top 100 recruit. So what I am banking on with Oregon is, from top to bottom, if Bo Nix struggles at the beginning, they can insert one of these other guys, a five-star Ty Thompson and a top 100 recruit in Jay Butterfield. And let's just say Thompson, you know, goes over Bo Nix, you know, midway through the season and lights it up. You have Ty Thompson as your starting quarterback, and you've got a guy that spent 3+ years starting as a quarterback in the SEC West as your backup. I will take that depth all day. And from that perspective, and, you know, gambling on these high recruits to hit for Oregon, I've got the Ducks at number four, and I just think they've got a really talented recruiting room. You know, I said Oregon might be the most controversial. This one, for me, I think I'm going to get ridiculed on because of what I'm about to say. But I stick to my guns on this one. USC is my number three team. And you're going, Will, that's insane. Caleb Williams might be the best quarterback draft prospect if he keeps projecting upwards, you know, since in the ilks of the Trevor Lawrences, the Andrew Lucks, the John Elways, the Cam Newtons, you name it. And I hear all that. Caleb Williams, last year, what he did as a true freshman at Oklahoma, 21 touchdowns, four interceptions on 64.5% through the air on 211 attempts, was outstanding. And that doesn't even account for what he was able to do on the ground, 442 yards on the ground and six touchdowns, averaging over 5 yards a carry on that too. The guy can spin it. He is the most talented quarterback in the not only the Pac-12, but maybe the country. And that includes guys like C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young. People can call me crazy. I think Caleb Williams is the best quarterback I've scouted. I saw what his tape was in D.C. as a, you know, a high schooler. And I saw what he brought to Oklahoma day one last year as the starter for the Sooners, supplanting a guy in Spencer Rattler, who a lot of people still believe could be a top NFL pick if he's able to put together with the skill set that Rattler has. So for me, Caleb Williams, not even a question, number one quarterback talent-wise within the conference. However, when it comes to quarterback depth, and this is what this argument is about, if something, God forbid, happens to Caleb Williams, they have literally one guy behind him, and that's Miller Moss. Miller Moss is a guy that, you know, had a lot of offers from Southern California, very good quarterback, but he's got, you know, 15 career pass attempts to his name. So when you only have two quarterbacks in your depth, that's going to naturally knock you down a few places. And despite how talented both of those guys can be, Miller Moss was, you know, for some recruiting services, a top 100 recruit, top 10 quarterback recruit in the country coming there to SC. I can't have them as high as the other two teams because they've just got more options if shit hits the fan. So for me, USC would have to rank as the number three team, despite everything I've just said about Caleb Williams and how high I am on this kid coming to USC. I know this is very unfortunate as Bruin fans, but Caleb Williams is that guy. And as soon as they got Lincoln and as soon as they got Caleb, for me, it was very tough to stomach that. I still think UCLA can beat them this year. If we can beat them this year, maybe we can carry that trajectory moving forward into the Big Ten, into things like that. I do think Chip has really found an area of great stuff. But USC with Caleb Williams is going to be a scary, scary proposition. The number two team that I've got, and it's the team that a lot of people are picking to take the Pac-12 outright this year, and that's Utah. And I think the factor of quarterbacks, it's hard to describe, but you know it when you see it. That's what I would say about the it factor when it comes to the quarterback room. And Cam Rising, what he did for Utah last year with how the season started for the Utes, Cam Rising has that effect. So week one, I'll take you back. Week one, Utah loses an embarrassing loss to BYU, a team they despise. That is their state rival. They dislike them a great deal. Charlie Brewer is the quarterback transfer from Baylor. Lots of experience. Cam Rising actually lost the job in fall camp. Brewer comes out again the next week against San Diego State, lays a dud. This is a team that's not even a Power 5 school, San Diego State. They insert Cam Rising. They're down big on the road at San Diego State. And it was just like a snap of the fingers. Cam Rising comes in and made play after play after play and took them to triple overtime against San Diego State. After that game, the quarterback competition was finished. Cam Rising was the guy, and he delivered on that. Final 10 games of the season within Pac-12 play went 9-1 over that span, throwing for 20 touchdowns to only 5 interceptions, completing 64% of his throws. Cam Rising ignited the fire for the Utah Utes in a way that we haven't seen in a long time in Pac-12 play, probably since Sam Darnold, if we're being honest, what Cam Rising did for Utah. And when people call him just a great passer, this guy had nearly 500 yards rushing on 74 attempts last year. That's 6.7 yards a carry, as well as 6 touchdowns. So Cam Rising, if all went well, you know, and maybe if he's healthy to end that Rose Bowl game, he got injured on one of the you know, drives in the second half, it ultimately cost them the game, potentially, you know, with Ohio State coming out and winning in the final seconds on a game-winning field goal. So Cam Rising, I think, is a guy that you have to put near the top, especially with how he's positioned Utah moving forward into next year. A team that, you know, I've seen some AP polls. I've seen them as high as 7 on some of this. That's competing for a playoff spot. Cam Rising has to be there. And the guys backing him up, by the way, this is a QB depth chart argument. When I look at backup quarterbacks, I look for the situation they played in. And when Rising went down in the Rose Bowl of last year, the guy that stepped up was a walk-on quarterback named Bryson Barnes. Ohio State had just taken the lead up 7 in the second half. Utah had just blown a big lead. And I think everyone in their right mind goes, this kid's a walk-on. He's not going to be able to make big plays. We've pretty much blown this game ourselves. Bryson Barnes led Utah on a drive that should be for a Disney, like a Disney movie. Led them on the drive, tied the game with a beautiful pass in the end zone. He was 2 of 2 through the air for that drive, 23 yards, that touchdown pass to tie the game for Utah. And what I look at with backups and people is how they respond in big games played. If they do get inserted into a big game, how do they react? How do they make things roll? There was no bigger situation for a Utah quarterback to enter the game. That was their first Rose Bowl ever. They're playing against Ohio State. The game is on the line, and Barnes stepped up and delivered. That gives me confidence as a fan, knowing that if he can do it in the Rose Bowl, he can do it anywhere. So Bryson Barnes and that performance, you know, helped Utah get that second spot on this list. And you throw that in with a guy that wasn't really healthy a lot of last year, but a guy that made plays, Jaquindon Jackson. And he is up there for me in terms of the best dual threat quarterbacks speed-wise, you know, when it comes within the Pac-12. Jaquindon Jackson has wheels for days. And what they can use Jaquindon Jackson is packages, like they used with him against Washington State last year. 4 carries, 21 yards, got in the end zone. So as a red zone threat to just kind of throw off the defense, you can implement a guy like Jaquindon Jackson there. That makes your quarterback room that much more dangerous when you can have those gadget-like quarterback plays to throw the defense off even more from the scent of what you're actually trying to do. So when you combine the likes of Cam Rising having the it factor, arguably being, you know, the best quarterback, you know, on paper, you know, for maybe a Pac-12 team, best returning quarterback. Caleb Williams wasn't in the Pac-12, so Cam Rising, best returning quarterback, there's a case to be made there. And then when you throw in what Bryson Barnes did when the lights were the brightest at the Rose Bowl as a backup, got to rank them up the list. And then you throw in the Jaquindon Jackson, you know, gadget into the mix, I've got to rank them number two. And Bruin fans, this is where we can collectively celebrate an on-paper win, because this is my opinion. I'm not being biased. I really believe this in my heart of hearts. I think UCLA from top to bottom, we may not have the best individual quarterback, even though there's a case to be made about that, has the best quarterback room within the Pac-12. And it starts with our guy DTR. He's coming into his fifth year of starting experience. He was PFF's highest graded quarterback within the Pac-12 last year. And just to kind of rattle off some stats for what Dorian Thompson-Robinson was able to do, he led UCLA to the highest scoring offense within the Pac-12. Individual rankings, he was led the conference in total touchdowns, was first in adjusted passing yards, and second in total yards as a quarterback. And yes, he did improve the turnover ratio from last year. 21 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. He was great. But where he really turned a corner was he started to gain intelligence as a runner and what that does to the defense moving forward. 609 yards on the ground as a quarterback for UCLA, led all quarterbacks in running last year, and he got 9 touchdowns on the ground, combining for 30 total touchdowns. This is his fifth year entering a Chip Kelly offense. Dorian Thompson-Robinson is as comparable as a starter as you can find. You know, if you want to argue straight up if he's better than Cam Rising and Caleb Williams, that's a separate argument. But I think Dorian Thompson-Robinson is among that top three, you know, in terms of making plays in the college football world. So Dorian Thompson-Robinson is your starter coming in there. Ethan Garbers, we just talked about what Bryson Barnes did coming in for Utah in the Rose Bowl game. Bryson Barnes performed as solidly in one of the more hostile environments on the road against a great team against Utah. And 27 of 44 through the air, 265 yards, 2 touchdowns and an interception. You go, Will, hey, UCLA lost a blowout to, you know, Utah on the road. We did not lose that game because of Ethan Garbers. We lost that game because our defense was miserable, to say the least. We allowed 290 yards on the ground and 5 touchdowns with 3 backs going for over 60-plus yards, including Tavian Thomas, who was well above the 150 threshold. So if you're going to allow that run game where you can essentially do whatever you want on the ground, it doesn't matter how good of a quarterback you have in the college football ranks. You got to score every time you touch the ball. And that's nearly what Utah was doing. Yes, I know you want to say Garbers, you know, threw the interception against Oregon in the Rose Bowl. He drove us down the field and he made plays to get us potentially in a position to either tie the game or win it against Oregon at home. So, I mean, that was Oregon at that time was the top team within the conference at that very moment. Obviously, Utah supplanted them moving forward. But for Garbers to even make plays like that fresh off the bench, I thought that was very impressive, including two big third down conversions. So you have Garbers there. Then you got Chase Griffin. We didn't see him last year, but he has three starts to his name, six touchdowns, two interceptions in that three-game sample size. He's more than comparable as a quarterback coming off the bench. And what strengthens the argument even more, and, you know, I'm projecting once again, Justin Martin, the highly recruited four-star quarterback coming to UCLA next year. Everything I heard in terms of spring practice was this guy has a chance to be the backup outright right now. So if Justin Martin on paper can supplant a guy like Garbers and Griffin, and those guys have starting experience, successful starting experience at that, with a guy like DTR, who's the most experienced quarterback within the Pac-12, UCLA is sitting pretty at the quarterback position. And Chip Kelly, you know, we've argued about the defense for years. The quarterback room is looking good moving forward with Justin Martin, you know, maybe being the guy to supplant, you know, Dorian Thompson-Robbins, Garbers being the guy maybe to supplant a DTR, Chase Griffin in the mix there. UCLA's quarterback room is top-notch, and it's going to show, I think, on paper when we go to fall practice and things like that. So the Bruins, this is an on-paper win that we can potentially celebrate. Those are my quarterback depth rankings. I encourage arguments all around, so please, in the comments, make sure you do that. Stay tuned for our position rankings around the league and where UCLA ranks among those moving forward. Bruin Bible, we are officially